Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Paul Gant, and for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinion, and all your beliefs. Excuse me. And of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number is to call 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. Jeremy?
Ollie. What's going on, man?
Another beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Phillies, Phillies are looking like world champs. And the NFL is looking like it's locked out.
Locked out. I'm locked out. and they are locked out. And speaking of the lockout, we're going to be joined by a football wife, Dawn Neufeld. Dawn's going to give her take. Dawn is a lawyer, if you guys don't know. She's going to give her take on what's going on with this whole lockout and tell us how she feels. So that should be a lot of fun. Should be a whole lot of fun. Talking to her and getting her thoughts on what's going on with this lockout. Because at this point, it is nonsense.
Well, I mean, you know, they're going to do some mediation soon, Paul. I mean, it seems like now, though, I think everyone's starting to see digging in their heels and getting ready for, you know, a big battle. To a certain degree, it's going to get them as far as it's gotten them now, which is nowhere land. So I think, to me, while there's really no communication, the fact that they're willing to try mediation at least shows both sides do recognize that they're not going to be able to solve this themselves. They're too far apart to have any real meaningful negotiations. So bringing in someone that is mutual and at least, I think, sensible in this matter for both parties could really could help stay the course, so to speak.
But at this point, there is they won in front of Judge Nelson. Judge Nelson is not going to give her decision until the next few weeks, and basically she's calling for, or hopefully these two can start talking again and start talking about what they need to talk about in order to get this thing settled. As of right now, both sides are a little off on what they want. The NFL wants federal mediation. The players want to remain in Judge Nelson's court. So we'll see how that all transpires, and we'll see what really happens. But at the end of the day, they need to talk. They need to talk. Somebody needs to talk. And they need to be down on the bargaining table, getting everything taken care of, so this thing gets settled and we can start talking about what we like to talk about, which is football. And that's what we like to do, and that's what we enjoy. We don't enjoy, I don't enjoy talking about court proceedings and all this other stuff. I mean, Demora Smith is somebody I don't really want to talk about too much. Jeff Saturday, I want to see him in the uniform. You know, I want to see everybody where I want to see everybody. I want to see the players in the field and the owners in the skyboxes and everybody else is in their offices. That's what I want to see. And hopefully, again, we can get this taken care of. But we're going to talk to Dawn Neufeld and get her thoughts on this whole situation. But I also want to start in baseball right now. And Manny Ramirez. Yes, the great Manny Ramirez. Well, old Manny Oops, he did it again. Tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. He already tested positive back in 2009, so he was in line for a 100-game suspension. But Manny, being Manny, decided, you know what? Instead of going through a 100-game suspension, I'm going to retire. Well, Manny has retired. Manny being Manny, and Manny has made the decision that he will not play no longer, and he's going to retire. A 100-game suspension was in front of him, but Manny was like, you know what? I'm not going to serve 100 games. I'm better off retiring. The 39-year-old Ramirez is going to retire. He has retired, and he's done with baseball. And just an abrupt end to a guy that whose numbers are incredible. I mean, 500-plus home runs, 555 to be exact. I mean, the guy has done it all in terms of hitting. He was he had the first suspension with performance-enhancing drugs so back in 2009. So maybe in terms of a Hall of Famer at that point, it might be a struggle. But at this point, it's even going to be a bigger struggle for Manny Ramirez to get to the Hall of Fame. Manny Ramirez probably will not make it to the Hall of Fame. And because of the allegations, these steroids, these are allegations, these are real, because of the steroids or the performance-enhancing drugs, whatever they may be, it's pretty much over for Manny in terms of a Hall of Fame as far as I'm concerned. Now, in terms, do I really think he should get in? I say they all cheated. So most of them cheated. So not only most of them, a lot of them. Let's just say a lot of them cheated. So if he was the best of the cheaters, one of the best of the cheaters, then as far as I'm concerned, he deserves to get in. But, Manny, you got to be one of the stupidest guys alive in a lot of ways. If, you know, you tested positive in 2009, and now you test positive again. Could you find some kind of better something or another to try to mask these things? I mean, this is crazy.
Well, that's why I'm glad you finally got to that point, which is he really, you know, I think if anything that Manny did is really tarnish. Of all the players, I mean, even a guy like Bonds, Manny, I think, will actually have tarnished his legacy, I think, almost to the degree that Bonds did, because Bonds, of course, breaks a very notable record and goes, you know, and is now in the midst of a trial and has never, you know, he continues to deny these allegations. But Manny, to do it, to get caught twice and in back-to-back years, I mean, to be the first guy really, and he denied it the first time and I mean, really kind of never came totally clean. So to get to this level, it's interesting to watch the fact that they will not a guy like Manny Ramirez, you know, recognize maybe he should have retired last year because you can't come back into the league anymore. I think Major League Baseball has shown that there will be no steroids in baseball, period.
Well, and the reality of it is, in my opinion, I mean, just not smart. And how would you not think he would get caught? I mean, how would you not think at this point he would not get caught? It's mind-boggling. I mean, Manny's had a great career, but let's be clear about that. But who's to say that he wasn't dealing with the steroid thing back when everybody was doing it, back in the late 90s and into the 2000s? He probably was doing it for the longest of times. He got caught again in 2009, and then he got caught here again in 2010. I mean, you look at, like I said, his numbers on the surface, those are Hall of Fame numbers. 555 home runs, 2,574 hits, a career on a slugging percentage of .585. I mean, the guy, in terms of numbers, is a Hall of Famer. In terms of numbers, he's a Hall of Famer. In terms of everything else, the steroids and Manny just being Manny, he probably will not get that call to Cooperstown when it's all said and done. And what a way to go out. What a way to go out. This is a heck of a way to go out if you're Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, Paul, and you see that at a lot of levels. I mean, if you're Manny Ramirez, I think it's completely embarrassing to be. I will label him pretty much since, as I said, since Barry Bonds. I think he's going to wind up going out as one of the more maligned, if you will, baseball players.
You're talking Manny.
Yeah, I think you're next to Barry Bonds. He will overtake McGuire because as this continues to play out, you know, I'm sure there'll be more information coming out about what exactly you know, he was doing and what he was trying to do, where it was, you know, coming from, and you'll see that. I mean, until you come clean and admit what you did, I think the media will continue to make you a story, and especially to me, where Ramirez, it was silly. I mean, it was just pure. You have to credit baseball. They very much have. You will not in Major League Baseball, you know, have steroids. Be a top tier player that they have you on their radar and get away with it. You have to give them credit for cleaning up their act.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, the sport obviously needed some cleaning up. And so far, I guess they're doing a good job of cleaning it up. It's just, you look at Manny Ramirez and all that he has accomplished, all that he has done. And you figure, okay, 2009, he did it. He took the penalty, whatever, whatever. But you would not expect him to come back in 2010 and try it again. I mean, you would not. It's kind of shocking to see this happen. I mean, Manny Ramirez, the guy has done it all in baseball. He's done it all. And to think at this point it all ends just like this, just like this, just like that. It's over. He's supposed to get suspended. He says, you know what? I'm Manny Ramirez. I'm not getting suspended. I'm quitting. See you later. Peace. I'll let you bowl. I mean, that's basically what he is saying in this particular situation. And it's sad to see anybody cheat. You know, it's sad to see anybody want to cheat, but the reality of it is, I mean, he felt he needed that extra edge. He is a little older. So, you know, he needed that extra oomph, if you will. And in doing so, he decided he needed to take some kind of performance-enhancing drug to get that extra oomph, if you will. And he got that oomph, I guess. But he was struggling. He was 1-for-17 to start the season, so how much it helped, I guess, not really too much, because at the end of the day, Manny was not playing like Manny, so Manny on the field was not being Manny. I guess off the field, in terms of all the things that he continued to do and has done in the past, Manny was still being Manny. But, I mean, it comes to a point now, you know Manny, obviously he tested positive before, but they had A-Rod, who tested positive a couple years ago. Who's next to fall? Who's next to come out? Who's going to be next? Everybody's, I mean, A-Rod was supposed to be the clean, if you will, next home run king, the clean home run king. And just like that, it came out A-Rod took steroids. So it's anybody sacred? It's nothing sacred. I mean, nothing sacred in this situation.
Not in baseball. I mean, I think that's it's unfortunate, but I think it may be time, quote unquote, to realize that, yeah, in baseball, no, nothing is sacred. I mean, you'll see, I think, for even the next five to ten years, we will continue to see players fall from glory. You know, guys, I think Ramirez, when you look at it, there was a player who, again, he fits that stereotype of, yeah, he was a great player, before, you know, that steroid era. And then during that era, I think when you look at those players in that era, you can now pretty much say with very much confidence every player of that era that, you know, was winning MVPs, that was, you know, winning batting titles, winning home run titles, winning RBI titles, probably as well in the pitching, you know, arena, they are very viable candidates to say that they were steroid users. The ones that were smart, I think, are out of baseball. I mean, a guy like Manny Ramirez, I think, was a shame to see him, you know, fall from this level of grace, because he has, in my opinion anyway, embarrassed himself to a level that, you know, he tarnished his whole reputation. If you think about it, though, but look at him. Let's look at him, and then let's look at a guy like, Mark McGwire. He plays past a time where he should have known you shouldn't be playing. Is it not more embarrassing?
Well, I guess it's embarrassing from this point. It's embarrassing that you got caught. It's always embarrassing when you get caught. I mean, you're cheating on your wife, and you get caught, that's embarrassing. If you're cheating on a test and you get caught, it's embarrassing. So it's always embarrassing when you get caught. And Manny got caught twice. And, you know, if he got caught twice, probably was doing it a few other times. And it's just like speeding. If you're riding down the road and you get caught speeding, you probably were speeding a whole bunch of other times. But that was one of the first few times you got caught. So you would think, with, like you said, the increase with the testing for various performance-enhancing drugs, that Manny would have been a lot smarter. You would think.
And you would hope.
You would think, you would hope. You would even almost pray, I guess. This guy would have made the right decisions. And again, make sure you stay around, because near the end of the show, Jeremy's going to nominate, and I'm going to nominate You Stupid Award for the week. Somebody's going to be stupid. Could it be Manny? Is Manny going to be the one? Could it be Manny? He's an easy choice. Or is it going to be somebody else? Make sure you stick around, because somebody's going to be stupid. Somebody's going to get that award. Manny's pretty close. It's pretty close with Manny. Manny, I mean, I don't know if it gets any dumber than this. I don't know if it gets stupid. I don't know. It doesn't get any dumber than this one. It really doesn't.
No, I mean, I think, too, you look at this, and one of the things we'll see is, and I totally agree with you, where, who's going to be the next one to fall? When will we find, you know, who will be the next major baseball phenomenon to fortunately fall from grace to these? And I think if I'm baseball, you know, I sometimes wonder why these sports, you know, why some of these commissioners don't get a little bit more involved. And they know who these players were. I mean, they really should rid themselves of this, because it very much hurts the sport.
Well, you can't, you know, there's at this point with the technology that we have in place in terms of guys coming out and being able to mask, all these various masking agents that are out here. I would just think that when the money that Manny has had over the years and made over the years, that he would find some good stuff to be able to get around this. I mean, you know, I mean, you would think he would get the best of the best. So, I mean, it's mind-boggling. I'm just not at a loss of words, obviously, but I'm just shocked that in 2010, when you already got caught in 2011, excuse me, you would continue to do it. You would continue to do it. Do you think he should have just took his music and set out the Hunter Games and came back? Or?
Oh, I mean, no, Paul. You have to remember, he's done. His playing career is over. I mean, you could see without the steroids, Manny Ramirez is no different than you and I to a large degree. I mean, 1 for 17.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I mean,
well,
I'll
get a hit. You give me 18 at best, I'm gonna get on base. So I got a wood eye.
I wouldn't say that. Obviously, I mean, you know, it does take a level of coordination, if you will, to swing a baseball bat, hand eye coordination, to see the pitch and read a pitcher. Steroids doesn't do that. Steroids doesn't do that. So I just think, obviously, you cannot step up to the plate and do what Manny has done in his career with or without the drugs. Let's be clear about that.
I didn't say I could do it in my career. But, Paul, I didn't say I could do it in my career, and I don't disagree. You know, where I believe any person is going to be able to do this is pure. It's in – or any, you know, baseball. What Manny did, though, was, again, he clearly shows you why, to a large degree, you know, your Hall of Famers, they are given a great opportunity because of a great work ethic. To that end, a guy like Manny Ramirez, you don't just you're not just given the right to do all of that. Manny really took those opportunities. And my assertion to all of that continues to be, it was stupid of Manny. I mean, it was really dumb to think, especially after last year, that you're going to be able to come back with a different, you know, type of steroid and not have them, especially watching what you're doing. It shows a level, I think, in some of these players the belief that they it's the good old days again.
And the good old days are gone for many. And you would think with Manny Ramirez in this whole situation, I mean, the guy was a kind of a carefree type of guy. We talk about Hall of Fame, but I don't think that matters to Manny. I don't think he really cares about that. If it happens, so be it. If it doesn't happen, so be it again. I mean, I don't think that happens. I don't think that. Manny doesn't care about that kind of thing. You might care about it. I may care about it. The fans may care about it. But Manny doesn't care. And Manny actually told ESPN's report page, he said, I'm at ease. God knows what's best for me. I am now officially a retired baseball player. I'll be going away on a trip to Spain with my old man. Those are the words of Manny Ramirez. So instead of saying, you know, someone, if they win a title, say they're going to Disney World, Manny says he's headed to Spain. So he gets a 100-game suspension. He says, I retire. I'm going to Spain with my old man. I'm going to chill out. And he brought God into it. He says, God knows what's best for me. God and cheating, I don't think that really goes together. But anyway, he says God knows what's best for him, and he's an officially retired player, and he's going away, and he's going to be chilling in Spain for a little bit with his daddy, and he's going to be living his life and enjoying the fruits of his labor because he made a lot of money during his time in baseball, and I guess it's going to be some good times for Manny Ramirez. I mean, he's 38 years old, in the prime of his life. He's got a lot of money. And
you expect to see you know, bigger and brighter since just the beginning for Manny? You know, it's a coming out party?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a new...
You're saying...
It's a new day for Manny. So
I understood that Manny Ramirez last night, you know, switched from AT&T to Verizon, bought his iPhone, and you're saying the first song he downloads on his new iPhone, iPod, Celine Dion, you know, it's a new day.
It's definitely a new day for Manny Ramirez. And you know what? Have fun, Manny. Enjoy your life. You'll be missed. And God bless you. I mean, that's all you can say to the man. And He's made a lot of money. Made a lot of money. Won a ring. Two rings. And what else can he ask for? What else can he ask for? And speaking of rings and the possibility of rings, the Philadelphia Phillies, all to a pretty good start. They did lose last night to the Atlanta Braves, but they're off to a pretty good start, and they're actually up 1-0 right now in the bottom of the first against the Braves. So that's up. That's your update. But anyway, the Philadelphia Phillies right now are a team that they're getting a lot of things from their lineup right now. A lot of hitting from their lineup. Ben Francisco, Wilson Valdez, some unlikely hero there, filling in. And they're putting up some decent numbers for the Philadelphia Phillies. And then you got the Aces, four Aces, doing their thing for the Phillies and making it happen. Right last night, Cliff Lee was roughed up a little bit for the Phillies. And but right now, you know, Halliday came in against the Mets a couple days back, pitched had a great effort, shut the Mets down. 11-0 was the final score there. And they're getting their pitching so far. Hamels needs to come up now and do his thing, but they're getting some pretty good pitching, and what you expect.
So, Paul, where do you? I mean, you know, it's only 5, 6, 7 games in this season, but I mean, how impressed are you, you know, with this team?
Well, like you said, it's still early. I mean, it's 162 games. They played 7 already. So what's that, 157 watts? So, I mean, it's kind of hard to gauge what's going on. Right now they're getting production from their lineup. They're playing small ball, a lot of small ball. I mean, the Phillies were kind of known for a bloop and a blast, if you will. And now they're playing small ball, and their small ball has been effective, if you will. And they're getting it done in terms of playing that small ball type style, a style that the Phillies didn't play. I mean, they relied on that long ball. But they're playing, they're getting the hitting in that lineup. They're getting the hitting. They're getting the production from guys in the lineup. And it's been effective, and they're off to a 5-2 start. You want Chase Utley to come back. You definitely want Chase Utley back. You know, you're not going to win anything without Chase Utley. You want Chase Utley in that lineup. You want him there. You need Chase Utley. You're going to need him
if you
want to make a serious run at this thing. Can they do it without Chase Utley? I think they could do it without him, but it's going to be a lot harder. But they can do it without him, but it's going to be a lot harder, especially with this pitching. With this pitching, if they can just get 2 to 3 runs a game, theoretically, they can win a lot of baseball games.
I think offensively I see them a little bit at a crossroads because they are definitely missing Jason Worth this early. You can see fundamentally the value that he brought to that team offensively.
Jason Worth is Jason Worth, but I mean he's not here, and I think they can effectively replace the guy. But of course, you're going to miss a guy like Jason Worth and what he brings to the lineup. You're going to miss.
Well, you're saying effectively. Whoa. Let's let an idiot's comment be examined. I mean, effectively replace him with who, Paul? Unless they go out into the trade.
Oh, at this point, Dominic Brown is supposed to come back at some point. And Ben Francisco so far has been playing some pretty good baseball. Batting .357. Again, it's still early. 3.357, 10 hits at 28 at bats. So he's playing some good baseball to start. This is the start. But obviously, when it's all said and done, Jason Worth probably will have a better year than Ben Francisco. There's no doubt about that. But if the pitching is what it is, then you could effectively replace Jason Worth with a Ben Francisco because you're not going to need as many runs as you needed in the past. So if Ben Francisco, I mean, he's not going to have Jason Worth numbers, but if they're comparable and if you continue to get the pitching that you expect to get, you should be fine if you're the Philadelphia Phillies. Now, the bullpen's a little concerned with Leach being out probably until July or June, so the bullpen's a little scary at this point. But if you can get the pitching, it's from your starters, you may be okay. You may be okay.
No, I mean, I think that you hit the nail on the head. I mean, they, at 3 runs a game, they are – you will have a hard time from a pitching standpoint day in and day out with their lineup. If they can keep you at three, four runs, offensively, that team has to be able to put up 3 to 4 runs. That's it's a Charlie Manuel, you know, system where, you know, they are expected to be high, you know, high hitting, high offensive team. So this is a great opportunity. This early on in the season, I think you certainly see though the possibilities, you know, if you will. And I think if you look around baseball, you do see the fact that you know, come August, they will be primed, you know, for a spectacular run. The only thing that will stop this team is an injury, well, several injuries. And I agree with you. If Utley can be healthy the whole season, I think he will be a focal point. And don't discount, you know, their bullpen. One or two injuries in a very shaky bullpen, and offensive, you know, from a standpoint of vulnerability, they're going to have to go out and move many pieces around in the trading market.
And if they have the pieces, it starts trading around in this market. But I just think right now, getting 7 games into the season, seen a lot of positives with the lineup. The pitching has been there. Lee got roughed up last night. Hamels got roughed up in his first start. But in general, the pitching has been there. Again, 7 games in. But obviously, they're 5-2, playing some decent baseball. But again, it's still early. And as this thing evolves, as this thing continues to work itself out in terms of injuries and in terms of guys coming back and things of that nature, we got to see what happens. But I think when it's all said and done, this Philadelphia Phillies team will be fine. And when it's all said and done, they will be where they wanted to be and where they probably belong, which is the World Series. No one belongs there, but I think they belong there because they are the Philadelphia Phillies. I'm a Philadelphia guy. That's my team. And I'm rooting, obviously, for the Phillies. But I actually think they'll be fine with the pitching and with hopefully what Utley's possible return at some point and what they have right now in terms of their lineup. I think they should be just A-OK.
Yeah.
We're going to be joined by Dawn Neufeld in the next couple minutes. And Dawn is going to give her thoughts. She's a football wife. She's going to give her thoughts on this lockout and give her opinion on what's going on. Again, Dawn, if you don't know, is a lawyer. So she can give us kind of a legal perspective on this whole situation, this whole thing. And this lockout is about this. And this song, when I think about this lockout, I think about this.
Yeah, who's wrong?
The great Tina Turner bringing it there. Who cares who's wrong? Who cares who's right? I don't care. I just don't want these guys to fight no more.
Oh, I mean,
I just don't want the players and
the
owners.
Keep your musical taste to yourself. I mean, on behalf of a great listening base and certainly your co-host. But second of all, who cares are couple hundred NFL players and a couple dozen NFL owners, Paul. So unfortunately, like everything else in the world, which is usually and stands to be true here yet again, unfortunately, controlled by a small group of people, which they're not willing to come together. They very much do not see eye to eye, and We've talked a number of times. It's millionaires fighting with billionaires, but you can certainly see that. Yeah, these people, you know, the players. There's arguments say you're a undeserved millionaire. All you do is throw a football or catch a football or block up another player, and you're a multimillionaire. By the same token, you know, an interesting article was out over this week in Philadelphia, you know, in the Philadelphia Inquirer Daily News and Philly.com regarding David Akers. And it was interesting to see there's a guy who played a great career, obviously for a kicker, was one of the top flight kickers and paid as a top flight kicker, and comes out and admits that not only are the health care costs lately really hitting home, he has a young daughter with battling ovarian cancer, and 2 years ago they were defrauded out of pretty much their entire net worth. So you have to really realize this is a, and I'm sure I'm eager to hear, you know, Dawn's take. This is more than just two people or two sides saying, hey, I mean, let's do business here. There's a lot of money at stake here.
There is a lot of money. There definitely is a lot of money at stake. There's no doubt about that. And in terms of my musical taste, I want to touch on that real quick. Tina Turner is a great artist. That's a beautiful and lovely song, by the way. But, I mean, let's bring in Dawn now. We're now being joined by Football Wives star and the wife of Ryan Neufeld, former NFL tight end Dawn Neufeld. Dawn, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing all right. Dawn, this is day 29 of the lockout. The players, their suit was heard by Judge Nelson. She will decide, in the next few weeks. I think there's a lot of positives from this whole thing. What do you think?
I love the fact that it's taken a woman, you know, a female judge to finally get these grown men back at a table talking again. I think that's kind of funny. So I often wonder how many women are involved in these negotiations. Not many,
right.
I'm assuming.
I would assume there's not many either.
It's been interesting. You know, you guys present a lot of issues. I had a chance to hear you talk with my husband Ryan last week about the lockout and some of the things going on. So I thought it'd be interesting if I give a call and give a Football Wives take on the lockout and what's going on.
That's a take we definitely would love to have, and we're going to definitely get it right now, Dawn. Now, Dawn, you are an attorney, so I want you to put your lawyer hat on right now. At this point, the players want to keep it in Judge Nelson's court. The owners prefer federal mediation. These guys can't agree on anything. But in your opinion, which one do you think would get us our new CBA?
I think the court process is obviously going to be better for players. And here's one of the things why. You know, when you're in private mediation and the sides are going back and forth, there's a certain level of transparency, especially from the public's point of view, you're never going to see. And I think one of the major sticking points for players, you know, as the owners are want to take $1 billion in revenue right off the top of earnings, the player's stance this entire time has been like, okay, we understand the economy's been tough and things are bad, although, you know, the NFL has had record attendance and record revenue. Just show us where you're losing money and let's address those particular spots. And, of course, one of the things that has been very apparent is that the owners are not only not willing to share their books with the players, it sounds like they're not sharing their books with each other. Well, once you get into court, and if this is something that ends up going to trial and stuff like that, you're talking about having to do discovery. And all of a sudden, the NFL Players Association is asking for them to open up the books in court. You know, unless the owners want to be held in contempt, and the judge is like, yeah, they're going to have to open up those books and show where they're losing money.
Well, Dawn, you bring up, that's one of the reasons of going a couple weeks back, Paul and I have been back and forth, and my biggest contention in all this is I don't believe that this is going to be as smooth as people want to believe. And as a lawyer, and you brought up discovery, and I'm sure that a lot of the owners up until now, certainly were in meetings, and the same with the players, listening and hearing what their advisors said. But now it's time for everyone to, we're in a month-long lockout, and there is severe differences. And when you look at the road ahead, and you brought up the fact that owners don't really know what's going on, players now have really started to, I think, they are way more unified. They recognize exactly where they want to go. Their plan has, I think, worked to their advantage, which is they are pressuring the NFL owner group to, like you said, be transparent. Just show us where you guys are having a hard time keeping up with being profitable. Show us what you've told the media. Show us what you've told the fan base, which is that you're losing money or some teams are not as profitable as others. And when they walk into Discovery, you can see you'll have owners fighting with owners.
Right. Well, and what's so funny to me, and it kind of cracks me up when I see these letters that Roger Goodell is sending out, you know, the NFL is basically getting bullied by the NFLPA and the players. That's what I'm reading in some of the NFL propaganda. And it really cracks me up. Again, you're talking about a $9 billion industry. The NFL isn't getting bullied by anybody. You know what I'm saying? They're just really trying to put a spin on this. Like, they're doing all of these things to really try and negotiate and meet a middle ground with the players. And all the information I've seen has been to the contrary. You know, it's like you ask for the world initially knowing you're not going to get it, and also knowing that you can give some concessions to make you seem like you're the good guy and that you're really trying, when in fact, you know, when you get down to the nitty-gritty and the real issues, open up the books, show us where you're losing money, and let's address those issues and stop playing the media game.
Yeah, and that's
the reality.
I think
the reality of it all. I mean, go ahead, Jeremy.
Go ahead, Tuff. Well, I am. I get the feeling, and I push this a lot. I think the NFL is kind of running scared from, I think, a players' union that was way more prepared for this strike than I think the owners anticipated. I think the players certainly selected the right representative, a guy that is coming in and doing his best to bully, and I couldn't agree more with you, a league that is almost untouchable.
Right. Well, and D. Smith is doing a phenomenal job representing the players. I remember when they were looking for a new guy to head up the NFLPA, and D. Smith's name came up. And, you know, I think initially my thought was, well, he's not a former player. He can't possibly know what's at stake and what's going on. I think, if anything, kind of having an outsider come into this league and really fight for these players has been to our advantage. I think a lot of the NFL has a lot to do with the old boys club, and so having sort of an outsider come in really fighting for these players and trying to do what's right, I think has worked to the players' advantage. And I'll tell you this, I mean, let's just be real. Ryan and I don't have a big dog in this fight. His last NFL team was the Buffalo Bills. We haven't gotten an NFL paycheck since 2007. You know, our insurance benefits didn't cease at the beginning of March as former players. We're not getting a paycheck. You know, we don't have that much at stake. One of the things we're really trying to get people to understand is the principle behind what's going on. And I'm fighting for all of my friends whose husbands are still playing, who at one point in time will retire and are worried about benefits, for all my friends who got their kids in Little League games and they're out there at age 7 and 8 getting on these football fields playing with the hopes of playing in the NFL someday. You know, we're talking about an issue of principle right here, and these owners want more money off the top. Now, what does that say 10, 15, 20 years from now? You know, these owners knew they were going to lock out several years ago. And I remember reading in Goodell's letter to the players, he said something about, we've sat in mediation for, you know, so many days and weren't okay, why did it take you to get to mediation 20 days before the CBA expires to all of a sudden you want to work out a deal when you've known for 2 or 3 years that you were going to lock out? Okay, so you tried for a couple weeks to come up with a deal even though you've known you were going to lock out these players – for 2 or 3 years, and now you're going to put it out there like, oh, we tried for a couple of weeks to come up with an agreement? Get out of here. It's just ludicrous.
And Dawn, you talked about some of the players who are currently playing, and like you said, they don't have medical benefits. And you look at it now, Dawn, I think the owners, they have the money where if this thing goes long, they'll be fine. But you've been around a lot of NFL players during Ryan's time in the NFL. Do you think these current players are truly prepared for a very long battle?
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, the whole fight about this being billionaires versus millionaires, I wish someone would look at my bank account. Where is my million? If I had $1 million sitting in the bank, I probably wouldn't be so concerned. But, of course, now that we're on the downside of Ryan's career and he's retired, we are very aware of the risks and the health consequences of everything of this career. You know, I think players – couldn't have been better prepared. The NFLPA was very careful. I mean, they sent out letters during the 2009 season telling players to start preparing to save their save some of their income. I know letters went out before the 2010 season. Put 50% of your salary up. You know, they sent out a handbook, basically, I mean, things that we would consider common sense. Don't go out to eat so much. Don't go out. Yeah. Things that we might consider commonsensical, and it's almost kind of funny, but those are the things that a lot of these players who are, what, 22, 23 years old, who've never had to worry about a budget, you know, the NFLPA would have been wrong had they not given these players these resources and these tips to save money. But then again, they're being chastised for having, you know, for having provided the information. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to interrupt because you bring up an interesting point, and Paul kind of chuckled about the dinners, and there is a misconception in the age, and your husband is a great example. I mean, you can have a successful career in the NFL, and you can retire pre-30. I mean, you can. And during your playing days, I'm sure you remember, going out to dinner, I mean, even when you go out to dinner with other players, I'm sure not everyone have the bill. It was always, it very much came, especially when you're with family and friends, I mean, you're an NFL player. You're picking up that bill, and you're not going to Arby's when it's, you know, free kids.
And it's the expectation that you're supposed to, too. It's like I always... I, you know, you're about as likely to have an NFL career as you are to win the lottery. And I think for a lot of people, when one person in the family makes it into the NFL, well, then someone, it's like winning the lottery. You're just expected to have this, you know, nonstop flow of income. And, you know, because we've discussed it so many times, the average career is only 3.2 years. That money does not last that long. And when you talk about a lot of these younger players who start out on practice squads, who, you know, are taking care of their mamas and babies' mamas sometimes and stuff like that, the money just does not last that long. And then, you know, one of the things to consider is that these I think I said this on the show last time I was on, you know, I went to school to be a lawyer. I can do that the rest of my life. Ryan went to school to play football, so what happens when that's over? And where's the preparedness for making sure they're ready to make that transition? And it's just it's probably one of the hardest things we've ever had to deal with, and it's still something we're dealing with and will be dealing with for years to come. And, you know, I've had a lot of people say, you know what you signed up for when you married him. Yeah, you know, 10 years ago when Ryan started in the NFL, we had no idea what the repercussions were in terms of concussions. I think the NFL only admitted a couple years ago that these concussions and these on-the-field hits and the practices that these, you know, the constant contact these guys are making might even have an effect on them in the long term. So if the NFL wasn't admitting it till 2-3 years ago, you know, you got these guys 10, 15 years ago who were playing in college who had no idea what the long-term ramifications of this sport were going to be. And it's been a very difficult transition for us.
And Dawn, you're a wife of a retired player, and we all know that. But and you're saying a lot of these issues pertain to these current players. But, you know, being a wife of a retired player, he has a future too, and he needs to be taken care of as well. So what do you think needs to be done for the retired players?
Well, I think the NFL and the NFLPA have been very proactive in recent years. You know, they're trying to set up more programs to really help out with that transition and to make sure that the guys are medically taken care of. You know, frankly, I don't believe 5 years of insurance, and of course that only applies to players who were vested post-NFL career. I don't think it's enough. I think they should be covered for life. You hear about these players. I don't know if you saw the GQ article about Fred McNeil that came out a little over a month ago. As a wife, sitting there reading an article about a player who had concussions and is obviously suffering very, very bad consequences of those concussions. You're talking about a player who did everything right. He was in law school while he was playing in the league. He practiced. You know, he's basically lost his mind, and they're linking some of this back to the concussions he suffered while he was playing football. I can tell you that Ryan had 3 documented concussions in the NFL. That's just documented. So that doesn't take into account all the ones that they didn't write down on a sheet of paper. You know, every time he got his bell rung on a play and got up and his, you know, was a little woozy. You know, as a wife, I'm thinking, okay, I'm reading this story about Fred McNeil. You read about players who commit suicide or the ones who are much younger and they have this PTE. You know, as a wife, I'm thinking, okay, what's going to happen in 10, 15 years when we don't have that NFL insurance anymore, when we're not covered anymore?
Well, and that's where, to me, Dawn, I continue to say there is a huge disconnect from the fan of the NFL game and the reality of the average NFL player. To me, every fan you see talking about this truly believes that when you're an NFL player, you are a multi-millionaire. You are set for life.
Right. Well, and I think it's important to address and discuss the fact that the average NFL player makes a lot more than the average American worker. I don't think anyone can deny that. There is no issue there. I don't think no one has ever denied that. I think where it becomes an issue for me, and it's something to consider, is, you know, the NFL is a great career, but with there are going to be consequences to it. And you know, yes, you can have a 3-year career and put a couple $100,000 in the bank. What happens after you don't get on that field anymore? And you spend a couple years trying to get back on the field and staying in tip-top shape and hoping that a team calls and not being able to go out and get a job because you can't work a regular 9-to-5 because you got to be ready in case the phone rings. You know, that requires money. And, you know, it's not like that money is just sitting in the bank earning interest. You've got to pay to support your families, and you still got a mortgage to pay and accountants to pay because you've got to pay, you know, income tax. You got to submit refund or, you know, income tax returns in the 6 states you played in while you were on a team. And
but also speak on the fact too. You raised one point about putting money in the bank, but honestly, speak on the fact that use Ryan for an example. I mean, signing bonuses for some players can be in the $50 million range, but even a signing bonus, a $300,000 signing bonus. But when you're handed a $300,000 check,
who's handed a $300,000 check? Look, wait, stop right there because that's an important point. You see $300,000, who gets that signing bonus? Uncle Sam gets half of it. Agent gets his cut, you know. So there's he got a this signing bonus. There are costs associated with that signing bonus.
And not just that, but by the end of by the end of it, this is predominantly for many of these players, this is predominantly the first check they ever received. That most of these guys at 14 years old didn't get their working papers because they were on the football field. At 18 years old, they were given a scholarship in college, so their career actually began at 18 years old or began at 14 years old, but it was deferred income, if you will, until that check. So these monies, and now you're told by your best friend, your mom, even other there is a and you walk into the locker room with a Donovan McNabb or a Terrell Owens who's driving a new car every day, and there's a lot of pressure to you don't come in with a Toyota Tercel. I mean you have to match those levels. And so how much of these monies really is saved in the first year when you go back to recognizing the average career is only 3 years, so you're a third into your lifespan, and in the first year, the predominant theme is probably going to be, hey, I've arrived, and I'm going to enjoy a little bit of the fruits of the last 10 years of my labor.
Well, and I think that's true, and that's what I always told Ryan. You didn't work this hard to not be able to enjoy it, basically. But that being said, it'd be great if he was the only one enjoying the fruits of those labor. That's what I'm saying. Mamas and daddies and sisters and cousins and your homeboy from junior high all of a sudden want tickets. You know, it's like every player gets 2 free tickets to a home game. What happens if 10 of your family members want to come to a game? They're expecting you to pick up the cost of those tickets. And so, yeah, and, you know, of course you want them to be there because they helped you get to that point with their support and being out at all your games. So I think there is a certain expectation that you've kind of got to live that life, but not everyone spends excessively. I mean, we certainly didn't. We have nice things, a nice house and a nice car, but we don't have 10 cars. We don't live in a $2 million house. So I think we were very responsible with our money, but have also dealt with the fact that, you know, Ryan's been out of football since 2007, and it's trying to reestablish and get your footing without losing it all, and it's a difficult transition.
And you talked about the family, the friends, and all that. How real is that? How real was that for you?
Well, we were very fortunate. I mean, I think Ryan came from a really good family where, you know, we didn't necessarily have a lot of those issues that you hear about, but I have heard stories. I mean, I've heard stories of, you know, a good friend who got drafted in the fifth round. You know, fifth rounders aren't getting multi-million dollar signing bonuses. They're doing okay, but they're not that much. And, you know, he's offering a buy his mom a whole new set of appliances for her house. She's like, no, I want a new house. So, you know, you hear the stories and they're very real, so much so that when, you know, the select group of rookies, and it's a select group, not all rookies go to the rookie symposium and are given tools to help transition into the NFL, they do a whole, you know, seminar on how to deal with people asking you for money. And like you said about the acres, it's like, you know, everyone's got an investment. Well, I got this deal. You know, how about we think about opening this restaurant? Or what about this clothing line? I know a lot of really smart people with really smart people around them who have lost a lot of money investing. And they tell you, you know, you got to invest your money. And they try and they think they're doing the right thing, only to come to find out that they've lost everything. I mean, years ago, who would have thought 10 years ago that the real estate market was going to tank? And there are a lot of people who invested a lot of money in real estate, and they lost everything. So how do you fault the player that thought he was doing everything right only to be a victim of the economy just like everybody else?
We're talking to Dawn Neufeld, wife of Ryan Neufeld, and one of the stars of VH1's Football Wives. And Dawn, speaking of Football Wives, we haven't really heard anything about the show. Is the show going to come back for season 2?
I have been told at this time that it is not being renewed. And the reasons why, the reason I've been given is that we weren't, you know, very interesting enough, which to me translates to there not being enough drama. But again, I reiterate that the women who were on our cast, most of us were married with actual jobs and responsibilities and husbands and families who, you know, can't necessarily get on TV acting a fool. And that's apparently what people wanted to see. And, you know, I think it's unfortunate. I think they were so set on giving drama that they didn't really tell the real side of football we were hoping they were going to tell. I was disappointed when, you know, you've got Football Wives set in Dallas and Super Bowl is in our city and there are no cameras right. anywhere. So to me right there, that was before we had gotten confirmation we weren't getting renewed. To me, that was a very strong indication that it wasn't going to happen, because how do you not film during Super Bowl? You know, we had a lot of really great things happen that could have made for great TV. You know, Matt McBryer went to the Pro Bowl, and we all could have been in Hawaii cheering him on. Dion, you know, is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Brittany and David Buehler, the kicker for the Cowboys, they found out they're expecting. They found out last week they're having a little boy. So there's been a lot of stuff going on with the Football Wives that have, to me, have been very interesting and very real, and I think would have made for good TV, and someone made the decision that those things were not going to make good TV, so they passed on us.
And that's unfortunate. You have the situation. You talked about the Basketball Wives, and obviously the Basketball Wives show was a little more edgier than the Football Wives show. But overall, the Basketball Wives, Football Wives, do you think these shows are positive representations of athletes' wives? And I say wives, but the Basketball Wives, they're mostly baby mamas. But do you think it's a positive representation?
Well, you know, I think they can be. I think some good came out of Football Wives, even in the midst of all the drama. You know, Ryan and I were very transparent about financial concerns. When he got hurt while he was in camp with the UFL, you know, he had a very minor injury. He had a small tear in his PCL. In the NFL, when you've got a 17-week season, if you get a minor tear in your knee at the beginning of the season, they're going to give you a couple weeks to get better. When you're talking about a shorter UFL season, they just weren't willing to give Ryan the time to get better. A small, you know, relatively insignificant injury cost us $60,000, period. I mean, that's
right.
The reality of that situation. And we were able to tell that side of the story. And for what it's worth, if people outside of football couldn't appreciate that, I have a lot of my friends, a lot of Football Wives in real life call me, text me, email me, saying thank you so much for finally telling our side of the story and for being real about it. You know, that to me was one of the reasons why I got involved in this project, to let people know that it's not all glitz and glamour and that there are some difficult times when it comes to football. And so from that perspective, we were able to tell a little bit of that story. Now, for what it's worth, I knew when I signed on to the project we weren't going to be sitting around a campfire singing Kumbaya, and there was definitely some drama. I think the drama that they portrayed was forced. It certainly wasn't my reality, and I think if they had just told the real story, people might have been more willing to buy into it.
Right.
Well,
and you know, for what it's worth, the show, I think the show did okay. We were the highest rated show on VH1 while we were airing. You figure we came on Sunday nights going up against Sunday Night Football. I think the AMAs were on at one point in time. I mean, the Soul Train Music Awards. Every single weekend we were competing against something, and our ratings kept going up. And there's something to be said for the fact that shows with worst ratings were renewed on VH1. I mean, I think it's kind of a shame that they weren't willing to renew the show.
Well, and I see it in a similar parallel in that the dramas and the tribulations of this show weren't, I mean, there was no surprise pregnancy. You know, no one made it to Roy Povich, which meant this was, if anything, it almost was very similar to, you know, a documentary-type show where the realities were more educational than entertainable.
Right. So maybe wrong network, you know, maybe under different circumstances, someone, a different network might have been able and willing to tell the story a little bit better. But I think VH1 has a particular audience, and they've got to
right.
do what they think is going to sell. I can't blame them for that. You know, that being said, let's just be real about the situation. Had there been a season two and we'd been approached about doing another season, you know, from my perspective after watching what came out on the show during season one, as an attorney, as a mother, as a professional, as a wife, I had certain reservations about signing up to do the show again, understanding that once you get to season two, you've got to amp up the drama and amp up what's going on. I had certain reservations about being involved because of what may or may not have been portrayed on the show, and just in terms of how it matched up with my reality. So,
are you still close to any of the cast members on the show?
Oh yeah, I still talk to everybody. I just talked to Shanita the other day. You know, obviously the only person I don't talk to is Pilar. I haven't spoken to her.
That was my next question.
Yeah, no, we've not spoken since the very last day we wrapped up shooting sometime back in October, which is just fine with me. you know, but I do speak with all of the other women. Everyone seems to be doing great. Like I said, Brittany and David are having a baby. We're super excited for them. Shanita and George are kind of going through a lot of the same transition issues as Ryan and I are going through. And then, of course, you've got Leonard and Amanda who are dealing with being in the throes of the lockout. So, I mean, there's a lot going on. And, yeah, we're all still very, very close and keep in touch.
Now, what's going on now with Dawn Neufeld since football watch?
Well, you know, not too much of my reality changed because of the show. I didn't expect it to. I certainly didn't sign on the football wire to become a celebrity. I didn't think I was going to see myself splashed across the cover of People magazine or anything like that. So I'm still doing what I'm doing, practicing law here in Dallas, and that's going very well. Taking care of the kids, our son Will, of course, who has autism, and we've been very vocal about that. April is Autism Awareness Month, so I'd be remiss not to mention that. He's doing well and doing great in school, and just being there and being a good mom for my kids has been very important to me, and none of that has changed. I'm still me. I'm still the person I was before Football Wives was on the air.
And where can we find information about Dawn Neufeld?
My website is dawnneufeld.com. I'm on Twitter at Dawn Neufeld. Lots of stuff going on, a lot of charity work as usual. So it'd be great to connect with people. We're still connecting with the fans. There were a lot of people who, like us, were kind of left hanging at the end of that season, and they've been wonderful. They want to know what's going on. They want to know what's going on in the NFL with the lockout. So it's been great to really keep up with people on Twitter and Facebook and everything about the lockout and what's going on in the lives of the Football Wives.
And real quickly, if Football Wives was done in a different way on a different network, would you return to it?
Absolutely.
Or would you do it again?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And people ask, you know, do I have any regrets? I often say my only regret was that I actually didn't push Pilar over the side of the boat when we, you know, had that little confrontation. You know, the experience itself was phenomenal. We had a really great time, had a chance to really get to know some of these women and had some phenomenal experiences. I mean, there are absolutely no regrets and absolutely would do it again.
And, Dawn, we wouldn't want you to catch a case. So maybe you wouldn't have done it.
I'm a lawyer. I know better.
I'm
yeah, exactly.
That's the one thing about you know, being look, and there's a lot of young women out there, and if I can ever get the message across to young girls, there is more to life than being pretty and catching yourself an athlete. I mean, if anything I tried to show on the show, you know, the NFL career will end at some point. You know, and just because the money stopped rolling in, the life doesn't end. I mean, we'll be dealing with Ryan's injuries as a result of football for the rest of our lives. So when the money stops and the times get hard, you know, that's when it's going to take more than a pretty face to keep the marriage together and everything else like that. So it takes more than just being somebody's trophy wife to be a football wife. I'll put it like that.
And that's well said by you. Definitely well said. Dawn, it was a pleasure talking to you. We wish you, Ryan, and everybody nothing but the best of luck. And we'd love to have you back in the future.
All right, sounds good. Let's hope they get this lockout situation worked out. I can tell the fans that the NFLPA is working very hard to make sure that there is a season. Let's keep in mind that the NFL locked out the players. The players aren't on strike. The NFLPA is actually suing to get an injunction to make sure that the season happens. So, you know, I hope the fans continue to know that the players want to be on the field in 2011. Make no mistake about it. They want to play.
Dawn, I hope they play. I know they'll play at some point. I've been on record as saying, ultimately, they'll figure this thing out. There's too much money
and
at stake.
And they will. Well, thank you guys so much for your continued support, and you guys have been awesome. And thank you so much. It'll be great to talk to you guys again in the future after all this lockout stuff gets worked out.
Definitely. Dawn, take care of yourself.
All right. Sounds good. Talk to you guys soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Dawn Neufeld, one of the stars of Football Wives, and the wife of former NFL tight end Ryan Neufeld. It was a pleasure talking to her and getting her take on the lockout, getting a wise take on the lockout. And she brought up something that was very interesting in terms of the women out here who are chasing these athletes with these pretty faces and beautiful bodies and the long hair and so on and so forth. You know, it's a lot more. Being the wife of an athlete is not as sweet as we may think it is. I mean, marriage is marriage. I mean, I'm a married man. Jeremy, you're a married man yourself. Marriage is marriage, whether with a lot of money, without a lot of money. So it's tough. It's tough work. It's hard work. And, you know, you see the situation with all these different football wives, all these different athletes' wives and the things that they go through. It's not all sweet.
Well, I mean, I think, and Paul, it gets the overriding theme, unfortunately, you see in professional athletes is glitz and glamour. And I think the reality, and the strike is another reality check, that it's not always what it appears to be. You know, and as we were saying, we didn't really Dawn had talked about the David Akers issue, and Dawn again was able to I think appropriately promote the fact that the term NFL player is vastly disconnected from what the reality of an NFL player is. The same with a professional athlete. I mean, you could be a professional athlete and play for the Philadelphia Soul. I mean, that's not necessarily to say you're a professional athlete on your resume or on your LinkedIn. I think it can be society who defines what exactly they believe a professional athlete. Not every professional athlete is Donovan McNabb.
Exactly. I mean, and the one thing about NFL, not like the other sports, not like the NBA, not like hockey, not like Major League Baseball. These guys do not have guaranteed contracts. So, again, you see 7 years, $70 million for some guys, and you're thinking, oh, $70 million. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. At any point, you can get cut.
and that contract is essentially null and void. It's essentially useless. It's just numbers on a piece of paper. So it, with not having the guaranteed contract, it's even more and more so the reason why, as an NFL player, you need to start taking care of yourself now. Start setting money aside. Start doing the necessary things, because at the end of the day, your career, the average career, 3 years. 3 years. So that's the average career. So there's a good possibility your career could end in year three. Then what are you going to do when you're in your 20s at that point? What do you do? What do you do at that point? And it's a reality check. You're at a crossroads again. It's almost like getting out of college. You're at a crossroads again. So what do you do? So the reality of it is you have to take care of your money. You have to take care of your money. The money clothes and the hoes, you got to be careful with that. I forgot the cards, too. You got to be careful with that. You got to be careful not to get caught up in that, because eventually it may all go away. It may all go away. You're not going to play football forever.
It's more than football. I mean, you got we have football wives, we have basketball wives. I mean, this country's obsession with fast money, to a certain degree, spins it back again to the fact that you can have fast money, but the government still takes their piece. I mean, there will still be a reconciliation at the end of your fast money. Unless the money hose close, and as you said, cars are hopefully a deduction, which they're not. Then you're getting the kids are they can be a great big deduction, and as many unfortunate athletes find out, that is oftentimes not the deduction that they were looking for.
It could be positive or negative, depends on how you look at it.
And that's the stark reality, is that, and we heard again from Dawn, and you continue to hear from athlete or athlete's wife after athlete's wife that's on the show, that they're, even if you're at great levels, even if your career was able to give you or bless you with many millions, it's still halved by every player, every wife we've had on this show, even the great early on Sean Salisbury, who are quick to mention Paul Uncle Sam. Everyone is quick to mention Uncle Sam and their former agent, who they will soon not forget because of the agent fee and, of course, the great Uncle Sam fee.
We forget about Uncle Sam. We always forget about Uncle Sam. A lot of people forget about Uncle Sam.
Some people forget about Uncle Sam permanently.
Well, you forget Floyd Mayweather, $3.4 million apparently he may owe the government. So we all forget about Uncle Sam, but Uncle Sam is real. He's real. He's real. And you figure you get a 30-year mortgage, unless you pay the house off outright, but if you get a house, you get a 30-year mortgage. Can you afford to continue to pay that high mortgage payment when you retire?
Right.
I mean, unless you buy the house outright, then you have all different other stories. But then you figure you buy a house for moms and everybody else. Everybody's getting houses, everybody's getting cars, but again, you only have a short window to do what you have to do. And that's why I don't begrudge these players for what they're doing here and fighting for what they deserve. I mean, the reality of it is this. It could be over in any moment, at any second. It could be over. It could be all said and done. And because of your football-related injuries, you might not be able to work a 9-to-5. You might not be able to do anything. So you got to get the money when you have an opportunity to get the money. So I don't begrudge anybody for wanting to get that money.
In all reality, Paul, I mean, even if, begrudging or non-begrudging, and one of the other untold truths, if you will, of these realities is very simple, which is no one has the lay fan. Again, the NFL fan doesn't understand. Everyone thinks, oh, well, you're just going to lead your life
with more money. And Dawn brought up an interesting point. You know, being a professional athlete is like winning the lottery. There, I mean, there's so many statistics out there that show you, I mean, over 50%. It's actually, I think it's in the 75-80% realm. These mega millionaire lottery winners within 5-7 years because the money is so, A, unexpected, and, B, it's frazzling. And that's why I go back to at 19 through, 22, because in NBA you could be 19 years old, and you could be 22 is a late bloomer. These people are handed million-dollar checks, and then as soon as your hand is a check, as Dawn correctly explained, well, then there is the withholding to the government. Your agent steps in, and he was your best buddy during your draft because he wanted that 15%. And then you have, nowadays you have to have a publicist, and you got to now have your media consultant because they got to do your Twitter and your Facebook so they could set up interviews with us. And all this money, it becomes a problem. But the reality is these players, quickly start to, it's stressful. And then, of course, a big stress relief is someone whispering in their ear, come on, money, you're the guy that made all this possible. What do you want out of this? You got, like you said, you got mom's a house, you got your sister a house, and what do you want? And most of these athletes say, hey, let's go to the clubs, and then it's closing down, the VIP section, and that's a $50,000 night, which for some of these guys, 50 grand and a $30 million bonus, it's chump change until it becomes everything.
Well, and you talked about the club and the popping of bottles and all these things, but also the big thing I think that gets into trouble is the baby mamas. You look at the story of Travis Henry, a whole bunch of baby mamas, and Travis Henry is broke. Evander Holyfield, a whole bunch of baby mamas, and he's struggling financially. You're getting with various women, and you're making babies with various women, that's a cost. That's a cost. Child support ain't no joke. So you're going to have to continue to pay that until they're 18 years old. So that's an 18-year mortgage, if you will. So it's real. You can't
and again, here's another stark reality that's certainly out there, and that is, and it's to me it's very misinterpreted, and that is, you have your first and you get burned. You have and Travis, you brought up Travis Henry because I like that example. There's a guy, of course, who's the worst case scenario because he has what I think it was 8 children by 7 different women, but the majority of these players are in the multiple child range. You're talking between 2 and 4. And so when you hit 2 to 4 kids and you think about you are now, let's say, 25, if you have a Hall of Fame career, you're retiring ratably at 33 to 35. And if you had your first at 22 and your last at, let's say, even and be quick about it, 26, which is popping out one a year, in 10 years, you still have another decade to go. You have 10. So when your income stops, now you're spending 20 grand a week times 3.
It's real.
It's humbling. And I think there is the unfortunate piece of the pie for the NFL play, and that's where you see this strike is a reality check for, I think, professional sports, because it is millionaires, Paul, fighting billionaires. But the billionaires, and Dawn brought this up, the billionaires were the ones, unfortunately, that have, they have the college degree, they have the education, they have the more long-term coveted value. They do not have long-term coveted value.
And again, they can be an owner as long as they have the money. They can be an owner for a long, long time. It's not a pounding on your body like it is as a player. So you could be an owner forever as long as you have the money. And more often than not, these owners, a lot of them have businesses outside of football, and some of them come for families who had a lot of money, a lot of some were self-made men who did it on their own. So, you know, they have the money to essentially be okay for ever or for a long, long period of time. You had a situation with former Eagles owner Leonard Toews who went broke. He was the owner of the Eagles. So, I mean, it doesn't last forever for everybody, but more often than not, it lasts for a long, long time. And Travis Henry, there's a total of 11 children by 10 different mothers. And it's sad. It's a sad story. I mean, he's locked up now, but it's a sad story. Sad story.
And it gets sadder when you know, like, the details of that story where, you know, almost every organization that man was playing for was lending him money. They were lending him, I mean, large sums of money, knowing full well no one stepped in and really started. Again, the players are really they are left out in the cold in all of this. They are the ones who are given these humongous cross to bear, the burden, because no one said to Travis, you know, as kid four, hey, Travis, you got to remember, your career, even at its best, were to be a Hall of Fame player, it's going to end at 40. And you're, what, 27? And you have five kids now? I mean, how much longer can you do that? And that's where I go back to these players are not, they're not in the right mindset. They're looking at short-term millions rather than I would make sure I got every piece of long-term dollars the NFL gets its hands on. I would want licensing money. I would want anything that you could see in your retirement rather than today is where I would want to be. That's where the players go. I mean, the NFL Network certainly makes its money, you know, the 16, 18 weeks a year of NFL, but it is a 365-day, 24-hour-a-day channel, which means there's a lot of old NFL games on there. They pretty much went out and basically bought Steve Sable for hundreds of millions, and rightly so, because they have content on content. They license themselves, to video games. They license themselves all over the internet and for advertisement. So long term, you know, the NFL has revenue streaming in outside of its core product. The player's core product is 7-10 Hall of Fame years at best. So if you're a player today, Paul, that's why I say I'm looking at this saying, you know, I don't have a college degree to go back to college, and if I do get it, I mean, who knows, like Dawn said, if I'm going to be able to use it. What I do have is a number on the back of my jersey. So that's where I'd want to be.
And in fairness to a lot of these players, I mean, you come into a situation, you come into a league never having the amount of money that you're about to get. I mean, essentially it is like cashing a lottery check, and a lot of people who win the lottery go broke. So, they're young. You come in 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, 19 meaning in the NBA and at Major League Baseball and so on and so forth. But, I mean, if you're in the NFL 22, 23 years old, I mean, you're forced to make grown man decisions at that time about a lot of money. I mean, maybe in a situation where you don't come from much, so you're taking care of others, that's a tough, tough responsibility, and that's a tough thing to put on a person's shoulders. So you can understand if they falter in the midst of all that. That is understandable as far as I'm concerned. It's very understandable. Again, you're young. You're dumb. So you're going to make stupid mistakes and stupid decisions. It's just a part of your situation, a part of being young. We all make dumb decisions. But the thing about some of our dumb decisions, it's not put on TV. It's not put in the newspaper. It's not put in magazines. It's not all over the internet. That's some of the things about our dumb decisions when we were young. So, yes, they have to be more responsible. Yes, you want to set aside money for the future, but, hey, I mean, you're young, you're dumb, you're full of a lot of things, and you want to do a lot of different things, and a lot of times you fall into various things, fall into a bunch of babies,
fall into poor financial decisions, and ultimately it costs you as you grow older when the NFL paycheck isn't coming. When everything isn't coming anymore and you don't have the money that you once had. So I can understand it from a player's perspective, being young and making the mistakes and not really worried about tomorrow, because at the age of 22, did you really truly worry about tomorrow? Anybody? Jeremy, at the age of 22, did you really think about tomorrow?
Well, but in all fairness, yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I know I did. I was the 22. I was in.
Well, okay, so you're one of the select few who, at the age of 22, who thought about the age of 55, who thought about the age of 45.
Well, that's the critical difference. I can also say, I mean, if I'm sitting here today and I'm going to tell you that, you know, but I wasn't a professional athlete. By the same, and then that's why I say that I wasn't, and you can't go out and sit there and you got to compare the apple to the apple. How many professional athletes are going to at 18 years old, or
no,
when they're 50 and hear me out?
Hold on. Before I hear you out, this is not comparing an apple to an orange. This is comparing age and age. I mean, 22 is 22, and I'm talking about terms of decision making. At the age
that's
of 22, you're not thinking about 45. You're not thinking about 35.
But before we
the decision making and your total mindset is totally different. The way you thought at 22 is totally different than the way you think at 35. Obviously.
Oh, like everything else, you're wrong. And if you breathe for a minute, I'll show you why. And it's simple.
Because
If you go back, before you go back to the 21 or 22, you got to go back to high school. And when they get their acceptance letters from colleges, are these players doing their due diligence and saying, well, did I get an acceptance letter from a better academic institution?
Can I stop you right there before you continue with your point?
Well, you have to, so go ahead.
What if you run into a situation, okay, Daddy's out the picture now. It's just Mama. Mama's working long hours, and Mama doesn't have the necessary. Mama does not have the necessary time to devote to help you through this process. You don't have the people around to help you through this process. That's what you're saying. Sounds good, but I mean, not everybody's reality is a mother and father who's involved.
In the immortal words, it's bull bleep. That was me. I mean, well known to you, co-host Paul Gant. Daddy left when I was four. Mom worked long hours. Certainly, I think the only difference is, to be honest, my mom pushed college on us from, I think, birth. But to that end, I mean, these athletes are me. They are sold, and until the group of – it's great to see Jeff – like you used Jeff Saturday. It's great to see Jeff Saturday out there now today talking. If it's going to change, it's going to change because every professional athlete is going to come out and start, as Dawn was saying, talking about the truth, the fact that it's great to see David Akers come out last week. Where he should have come out was – last week. He should have come out when the fraud hit, but he was too embarrassed to admit. And he should have, when it comes out, recognized and said, I'm sure I'm not the only person or athlete or even rich individual this happened to. The reason it happens to people like a David Akers as opposed to a Jeffrey Lurie it's well noted. Jeffrey Lurie's family came from money. David Akers' family
right.
may have come from, they may have been well-to-do. They didn't come from that kind of money. And then that's why I go back to saying it's the education that will propel the long-term success. And that's where it gets to what college you go to. The goal is either going to get me to the NFL, which is great. They're going to get you to the NFL. If that's your goal, to get to the NFL, which every athlete unfortunately is, their goal is to get to the NFL, which means their goal was correct. It was executed perfectly, but their decision-making was flawed because then their goal was attained just about 40 to 45 years premature. because their playing day ends, and you know, their goal ends at 20 to 22 years. So, you know, and most of these players, even the ones in poor health, will live into their 60s. So, and that's why I used the 20, the 40 years later. I mean, it's unfortunate that that's where you see the failure of almost every professional athlete. There's very few professional athletes. I use a really good one, a great example is Magic Johnson, who personifies, you know, stupid and what simply could be, you know, he was the, I think if you go into history and you context history, probably one of the stupidest athletes, because he was the first athlete, you know, known to have the consequence of HIV/AIDS inflicted on a superstar, but has turned all of it around. Because also, Paul, he graduated college. He got a degree.
But what you're calling him stupid because he contracted AIDS, but are you calling him stupid because of how he contracted AIDS?
But that's what I say. He is the great anomaly of I think arguably our time. Here's a guy who you see on the personal side of things, he recognized at a very young age, and when you watched it, there was an HBO documentary between him and Bird. He spoke about that. I mean, he very much spoke about the fact that the when he contracted the HIV virus, it was a major wake-up call. He went back to being Irving instead of Magic. And but now you see a man who he is an entity in and of himself. He is like a Michael Jordan, who, sure, Michael Jordan, unfortunately, you see again after his playing days, maybe had what seemed to be a great marriage, but it obviously wasn't, made some, you know, moral flaws. But Michael Jordan has an empire because, again, Michael Jordan was, sure, he was playing basketball, but he was playing it for, and he was a great, great basketball player. But you can look at a Michael Jordan and then look at a Allen Iverson.
But you have to, here's what I think you're real failing to realize here on a lot of levels is, yes, some of these guys, they do not have the necessary support systems to get through this whole tough dealing with dealing with, even on the college level, dealing with various universities and deciding where to go for college, dealing with the recruiting process in terms of colleges, and even going to the next level in terms of being drafted and going into the NFL, NBA, or what have you, whatever league. Yes, you had the foundation. You had a mother who pushed college on you. You had a mother who pushed all these things on you. But a lot of people do not have that. A lot of people don't have that. A lot of people come from broken situations and don't have the necessary skill set in terms of thinking things through and making rational, logical, smart decisions. And it's kind of hard. My overall point is this. At the age of 22, you're not going to make the same type of decisions that you make at 35. If you do, then you're a fool. But at the age of 22, you're going to make some bad decisions. And some of those bad decisions could be the money, the clothes, and the hoes, and the cars, and all that. You're going to make the bad decisions with all that. You're going to make bad decisions with all that. It's expected. You're going to make bad decisions with that. Now, Jeremy, you were one of the select few that made smarter decisions, who thought about the age of 45 at the age of 22. You were one of those guys. But you also didn't hit the lottery, like you said. You didn't hit the lottery and go to the NFL. You didn't do all those things. But the reality of it is, and my whole point is, the 22-year-old mind, whether it's with money or without money, is a mind that's going to make a lot of mistakes. It's going to make a lot of mistakes. And my whole point is, you see these mistakes that these athletes make because they're prominent people, and it's all over newspapers, internet, television, so on and so forth.
I will say this, Paul, there's no one who disagrees with the point of the support systems in there. I think, though, there has to be a personal somewhere along the line, some of these, you know, athletes or you know, when you use the term, you know, underprivileged, they need to wake up and realize how there, you know, there needs to be a point where you look at everyone around you. And if you are blessed to be
That's easier for you to say. Yes, it sounds good. Sounds great. Sounds lovely. But that's a lot easier for you to say it from your perspective. That's a lot easier for you to say. But a lot of people can't say that. There's a lot of people who cannot say that. Yes, smart to be smart. Yes, it's smart to set aside money. Yes, it's smart not to get caught up in certain things. But people do. People do, and people don't always have that support system that you might have had, that I may have had, and others may have had. Everybody doesn't have that support system.
Well, I'll say this, and the reason I will continue to largely disagree, and I mean this, is mainly, Paul, I look at, and I firmly believe there has to be someone. You as a person have to have some level of personal accountability, which means you as a person need to remember, look around you. If you are especially fortunate enough to, at 16, at 19, be getting a scholarship to Alabama to go play for one of the greatest college football coaches of the last two or three decades, do not just go into college at a junior when you're on Mel Kiper's big board. Don't leave that institution without getting what you went there ultimately. What you went there ultimately to not leave without. I mean, certainly it would almost. Paul, hear me out for a second. If a person has enough accountability, if they were number one on that draft board and they were giving up $20 million, they would almost be smart enough to just sit out of football, retire from college football for 1 year, get that degree in a marketable or somewhat marketable, even if you were a teacher, so you could go right out because
who's going to pay for that degree? Who's paying for that degree?
That's the university. You could say you're injured.
Scholarship is a year-to-year thing. If you're not playing football, how are you going to get the degree? You're playing football. You're getting a scholarship with the understanding that you're going to play football for the university.
So you mean to tell me, Paul, you couldn't you don't think again? But here again is and it was just brought up. HBO, I think it was last week, did a wonderful documentary documenting the fact that here again the athlete. I remember the one line that struck me, that's a good point you're raising. So how dare you as an athlete take a scholarship where you have to year be guaranteed something that the university should be giving to you? If you get injured, you can lose your scholarship. But if you said, you know what, I've lost the love to play for this game, but for 3 years I've made you millions and millions of dollars. The athletes of today needs to start recognizing the long-term value they have. I mean, it's interesting when you looked at I'm trying to think of, he was UCLA Bruin. I can't think of his name. He played in the NBA.
Ed O'Bannon. Ed O'Bannon.
Showing, you know, during the documentary, the fact that he has been out of basketball for over a decade, and yet when you buy the 2010 version of NBA or college basketball, his team, because it was a winner or it was in the Final Four, is still there with his number, and he gets nothing. But the university, UCLA, is getting that notoriety. But he, not the university, was responsible for that. And therein lies, that's where the problem for these athletes begin. They forget their long-term value. They sell them. They are nothing more, and dare I say this, with just over 12 minutes to go, Paul, they're nothing more than two-bit whores. Because you can buy them as cheap as you can buy a blowjob on the street.
to me, your silence is deafening because, you know, I'm sure you're out there now. You are certainly, you know, in prayer for me. I had to use a little bit of reality, or as you call it, vulgarity. But I genuinely look at the fact that these players do not recognize the reality of the ownership, or, you know, the colleges are looking at them. They look at them, Paul, as nothing more. I'm going to say it again. They are two big whores.
Well, it is the ultimate pimp and prostitute relationship. The field, that is the corner. You, as the player, you go out there, prostitute, being pimped by the university. You're selling your body, giving up your body, basically, for the university to take your money, take all the money that is made from that particular game. So you're doing your work on a corner, which is the football field, and then the pimp, which is the university or the NCAA, comes on down and says, you know what, big fella, give me all that money. Let me take all the money, all the work that you did, that's my money. That's not your money. That's my money. But here's what I'll do for you. I'll give you a little money, a little change here, give you a little money here. Here's what I'll do for you. I'll give you a scholarship here. I'll give you a scholarship. No, darn well, your own reason that you're at the university is to play football. So they don't really care if you get your education. The pimp doesn't care what the prostitute does with her money. Maybe she'll get drugs with the money or something. They don't care. The pimp, which is the NCAA, they don't care if the kid gets an education or doesn't get an education. Who cares? As long as you're making money for me, big fella, everything is great. Everything is good. So that is the ultimate pimp and prostitute relationship, the NCAA. Now, in terms of paying money, I don't know how it could be done, and I don't know how they could make that happen or make a situation where that can be a good thing. It obviously they need something. Obviously they deserve something. But in terms of actual putting together a system to pay these guys, I don't know how they would do it. I don't know logistics, how they would logistically do it. But I know this. Something needs to be changed. Something needs to change. I mean, you got guys out here who, again, giving their bodies to university, and they're not getting anything out of it. They're supposed to get education out of it. Yes, they are getting education out of it, in theory. But, and it's a big but, a lot of those guys are there not to be a student athlete, but they're there just to be an athlete. You can forget about the whole student part. That sounds good. That sounds great, actually. But you're out there trying to make money for the university. It's the ultimate pimp and prostitute relationship, and something needs to be done about it. Something needs to be done. It has to be done.
I say this, Paul, but that's why my plea, as you see, is to, I think, that the current day and especially the future day athlete to say that they really need to wake up and recognize, I mean, there is no point in taking, if you're Matthew Stafford, you should really be the guy that's the most afraid, because you were the last one. I mean, most likely you were, with very reasonable degree of certainty, you're going to be the last guy who the NFL is going to hand all that money to with no real proof in what you do. Yet, I mean,
Sam Bradford's probably the last guy.
Where are you going? Where is he going to go, Paul? I mean, what is he going to do with being the last of a generation to get that kind of money? He got the big mega buck, and what's he going to do with it all?
Well, hopefully he'll invest it wisely. Hopefully he'll set some things aside for the future. But she's young. And like you said, Uncle Sam has to get his chunk. The agent has to get his chunk. And $50 million, that if you look at Sam Bradford, he was guaranteed $50 million. Obviously, $50 million is not $50 million. When it's all said and done, I mean, government gets his take, the agent gets his take. So you're looking at, what, close to $30 million at that point? Maybe $40, $30 million? I'm not
don't claim to be
the biggest mascot. You're going to look at on that $50 million. You're going to look at I'll say 27-30 mil, splitting maybe a couple of million hairs, but he's going to take home just under 40% of that. Just under.
Well, and that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Well, I'm going to tell
you
right now.
Let's be clear about
that. If you think that's a lot of money, you've got no. I mean, it's a lot of money, but again, Paul, it's a lot of money unless you're the guy who's out there popping $50,000 bottles twice, three times a week for, you know. So, I think there is, again, it's just absolutely unknown how much these athletes will buy a $3 or $4 million home that they never live in because they're always out, and they furnish it with another $3 or $4 million. And then they have $3 or $4 million in cars, and that's in the first year. And you spent $7-8 million in all you, Paul, but all you got was guaranteed $50 million less the taxes, so about $30 million. So you spend a third of that in the first year.
But that goes back to youth, and that kind of goes back to my whole point. Youth. Now, I see $50 million. I'm thinking $50 million at the age of 22 is going to last forever. There's no way. There is no way on God's green earth I can go through $50 million. Now that $50 million turns to $27-30 million after taxes. Legal fees, so on and so forth. But I think in my mind, and my young mind, that there is no way I can go through that. There's no way. So people have done it. They have gone through millions upon millions upon millions upon millions. I mean, Mike Tyson, $300 million. Holyfield, I believe, $300 million. They went through it. They went through it. And you would never think that's possible. In your natural mind, you would never think that's possible. There's no way you would think that's possible. But it's possible, and it's real. It's real. It's real. And, I mean, like I said before, a lot of these guys come from situations where they don't have the support systems. They don't have the people... The good people in their ear. They have people in their ear, but it may not be people who have their best interests at heart. You have leeches in the ears of some of these kids. And it's a tough situation. It's a sad situation. I mean, that's got to be tough and a very humbling situation to go from making millions of dollars to being essentially broken in debt. I mean, that's got to be a humbling situation, a tough situation, a situation that it's got to be tough to come back from. I mean, that has to be a very deflating situation. I mean, you were on top of the world, in a lot of ways, on top of the world, and all of a sudden you go back, you go to the bottom, and that's why the old saying is you got to be careful who you step on as you climb to the top, and you got to be careful how you act when you're on the top, because the same people that you see going up will be the same people you see going down. So that's why it's very important to be good to people. And I give you a nice little life lesson as we talk about this whole situation. And that's the reality of it. That's the reality of it, everybody. Tomorrow, you figure, okay, $30 million, $40 million. But who knows? And who knows that this will go away? Who knows that it will go away? Who knows? Got another 6 minutes left. And it's about that time. It's about that time. It's time to crown and tell the world who has been stupid this week. It's the You Stupid Awards. You stupid. It's that time. And my nominee is none other than the great Manny Ramirez. Manny got caught in 2009. I know you love being Manny. Manny loves being Manny. Manny is just being Manny. I know you love it. But Manny, my man, my friend, my brother. How could you be so stupid? You were caught with performance-enhancing drugs, or PEDs, as they like to call them, back in 2009. 2010, you were caught with performance-enhancing drugs in your system. How could you be so stupid? How could you be so dumb? Well, Manny, you made a lot of money in your career, and you're going off to Spain with your old man. Enjoy yourself. But, Manny, enjoy this and enjoy this award, because, Manny Ramirez, you stupid. So that's
well,
my nomination, Manny Ramirez.
And I look at a story that was smallly publicized here in Philadelphia, and it's unfortunate. I wish we could talk to – I'm eager to hear or listen to what Stephen A. would say, and that's Allen Iverson. Because that's when you get pulled over by the cops, I mean, the last thing you want to do when that guy's got a boom microphone in his car and a video camera, these days, everyone, one or the other, don't ever go on a cursing tirade that lasts too many minutes, especially when, I mean, you're Allen Iverson. Because, man, that was funny, but you look stupid. And for a guy who went over to Turkey and couldn't even play the ball there, you look even dumber. We have 2-3 minutes
That's
left. I'm interested to hear you comment on how stupid is Allen Iverson.
Well, it's not one of the smart decisions he's made, obviously. But I got a lot of love for AI. So because I had a lot of love for AI, I still got to be hard on you, brother. I love you, AI. Let me say this. I love you, Allen Iverson. You're my man. 2001 Philadelphia 76ers. My favorite team ever. But AI, registration, you got to get that right. You got to get all those things right, man. And again, you can't be going around allegedly saying, do you know who I am, all this other mess. You can't say that. Because currently, what you are is a guard for a Turkish team, and you've been hurt. But I know who you are, AI, and you've been a great player in the NBA, and you've done great things in the NBA. But AI, that's not smart, man. That's not smart at all. And actually, it's a little stupid. It's a little stupid. It's not really a little stupid. It's a lot of stupid. Allen Iverson, Manny Ramirez, you stupid. So that's our nominees for the You Stupid Award for the week. The great Allen Iverson and the great Manny Ramirez. How stupid can you be, Manny Ramirez? How stupid can you be, Allen Iverson? How stupid can you be? You got to be smarter than that, fellas. You have to be smarter than that. Come on. Got another minute left in the show. I wanted to get to the NBA, but we'll have to say that for next week. The playoffs will be set next week, and we'll know for sure who's playing who. We'll know all the matchups, and we're definitely going to talk about that next Saturday. The NBA playoffs is here. It's around the corner. It's going to be here next Saturday. It is the most wonderful time of the year. You say Christmas. You say March Madness. I say the NBA playoffs, and I say it's going to be an amazing April. It's going to be an amazing April. I'm looking forward to the NBA playoffs. Tired of talking about this stupid lockout stuff. Get that stuff taken care of. Get that stuff taken care of, players, owners. Get it taken care of.
Yeah, who's on the right? I don't really want to fight no more.
Get it taken care of, please. Please, please, please. We want to thank Dawn Neufeld for stopping by. Make sure you check her out on Twitter, Dawn Neufeld. make sure you check her out at DawnNeufeld.com. Also, I want to thank everybody who listened, everybody who called. And again, you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this show and other shows. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gann. I hope everybody has a great week. See you later. Take care. Bye.